You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I'll let Bobby Warsaw tell me how I did it.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I'd like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I liked it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T Studios in Manhattan, our final live show of 2019. I'm David Goss. Andrew Wiebe is currently en route to Kansas with a two-year-old on a plane, so Godspeed to him and all you're doing. I dragged Matt Doyle in for one last show. And this man right here, the legend from MLS, Darius Barnes, former defender, New England Revolution great, joining us.
No, thank you for having me. It's good to be on the show.
This is what you've strived for your whole career, right?
This is what I've been waiting for.
This is the moment.
Taking all the baby steps in my career.
As a kid, you're like, one day I will play professional soccer so I could then go on Extra Time Radio.
No, I'm giddy right now. I don't know what to say.
So when you were playing, how many players in the locker room, like what percent, listen to Extra Time Radio?
Wow. That's a big question to start the show.
Right? I got
to
put him on the spot.
That is. 0.3%.
Okay.
You guys, that's a big jump from we were at 0.2 before. So we're growing, which is what we want to see. And I like to consider us the triple D combo. David Doyle and Darius.
Let's go.
Yeah, you don't have a first name, so it's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah, I think most people know you that anyway.
Yeah, that's
when your wife calls you Matt, it confuses me because I didn't know. I thought she's married to two people, and I'm always looking for that Matt guy.
Does Megan call you Dave or David?
David, and very specifically.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no nicknames. There's no anything else. Mm-hmm. It's very off-putting when people call me other things.
Straightforward.
Yeah. It's all business. You know, it's all professional. We've got a great show today. A lot happening because the season never ends. We have a new Major League Soccer franchise that has officially been announced in your home state of Charlotte, North Carolina. So you're going to give us the North Carolina expertise because we've just been blowing, you know, hot air about it for the last three, 4 weeks. Have you been to the state of North Carolina?
I've been through it and I've flown through it, but I've never.
I don't know that flying through something counts.
Okay, well then no. Yeah. Well, I've driven through it.
Okay.
Yeah. But
and
we'll give you the world tour.
Yeah, he'll give us the real experience. Then. Yeah. I think that might be a little bit better. We've got some news coming in Chicago as we head into the big part of the offseason, which we're very excited about. We also have rumors of one of the biggest signings in Columbus Crew history, and we've got what
it would
looks
be the
like
the biggest signing.
Well, I don't want to throw it down there if it hasn't happened yet. Right.
It's rumor of the biggest reports of the biggest signing.
Give it some wiggle room
in Columbus Crew history are. The report is the signing is imminent.
Okay.
If it were to happen, it would be the biggest signing.
And
if it doesn't happen,
it wouldn't be the biggest signing.
There you
I think that's decent math. And it could also set them up to be one of the best starting lineups in Major League Soccer. We've got our national TV and TV schedules as the schedules has released for the 2020 MLS season. We're going to talk about that. We're very excited. Plus all your questions, rumors, transfers, all that stuff going on. So let's get started with the biggest news. Charlotte awarded the 30th franchise in Major League Soccer. David Tepper, the head of the ownership group, also the owner of the Carolina Panthers since 2018. The team will start play in 2021, the Bank of America Stadium, which is the home of the Panthers in Charlotte. They will start in 2021 alongside Austin. And then, of course, St. Louis and Sacramento are coming in 2022 because that is it. The expansion pack is done. The cap is on.
That caught me off guard.
When
the commissioner said that, I think he said it first to ESPN,
mm-hmm.
and I saw that headline come up, and I like threw that at the editorial chat. I was like, "Do we actually have we heard this before?" But he was adamant. This is it, 30th and in.
He has doubled down on it multiple times since then. But let's start with 30. Let's not talk about the other expansion.
Hard stop.
This is a big moment. This is for an area that is famous for its soccer from its grassroots up. The college soccer, of course, is probably the cream of the crop around the country, throughout the state, and multiple professional franchises, as well as two-time women's NWSL champions. What does this mean to your home state? What does this mean to North Carolina?
This is huge. I mean, I grew up going to Raleigh Flyers games in the A-League. You know, if I might have dated myself a little bit with that one, but like that, this is huge to have a Major League Soccer team in my home state of North Carolina. I couldn't be more thrilled. It's my home state. I'm from Raleigh, so not technically from Charlotte, but It's all the same. You know, we're the South. We're the South. And I think we couldn't have picked a better market, you know, to represent MLS and to start a franchise. They have, you know, all the resources. Tepper's going to, you know, put his mind, heart, soul into this club. And I think I really think they're going to hit the ground running. He seems like he has very high ambitions. And, you know, the youth soccer in North Carolina is, you know, the pinnacle. You know, there's, you know, so much talent there. He's going to have so much, you know, talent to choose from in the backyard to start the academy. You have some, you know, great youth soccer clubs down there already, in Charlotte Soccer Academy. You have Charlotte Independence. And then down the road in Raleigh, you have North Carolina FC, who actually, you know, merged together with, you know, an elite powerhouse of, you know, Castle, who's, you know, known around the globe, around the United States for being a powerhouse in youth soccer. And they merged with my former club, Triangle Football Club. And I just think it's a massive win for the state, massive win for, you know, the cities in the state to really have something to hold on to call your own. It's fantastic. I think they're going to blow it out the water.
What's the soccer culture like? Because you mentioned that youth ranks, and I think we all know those clubs that you mentioned. I grew up going to tournaments down there. It felt like every kid that comes out of North Carolina, men's and women's, plays soccer. What is the culture like? What's the game going to be like?
Yeah, I mean, it's just – It's invigorating. It's exciting down there. Every kid in North Carolina, you know, plays soccer. And, you know, you really wouldn't think that. You really wouldn't think. Everybody kind of asks, like, why does North Carolina produce so
you
much soccer talent?
You would think basketball and football,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, which we have that, too. Yeah. We have a little bit of it all. But there's so many great athletes that are produced from North Carolina. And I just think it kind of speaks to the culture of North Carolina, just what it is. It's, you know, Southern hospitality. You know, middle-class families who, you know, want the best for their families, for their kids. And, you know, they want to, you know, find escape and find an outlet and find a route for them to, you know, for them to succeed and for kids to enjoy and have fun. And, you know, everywhere you look, there's a soccer field in North Carolina and kids are playing, you know, day in and day out on the weekend. And I think that's really what, you know, families, you know, held on to, especially as I was growing up. A kid, his name is Zach Adams, who ended up being one of my best friends. And his dad ended up being my first soccer coach and just, you know, asked me if I wanted to come, you know, play recreational, then asked me to come try out for a team, end up making a team called the Knightdale Bad Boys.
Ooh, that's a name.
We're really, really going back there now.
Branding opportunity for the new team.
Oh, man.
Knightdale Bad Boys. Was Will Smith on the team or Martin Lawrence?
One of my favorite movies, though.
Yeah, there you go. It's coming. They're making a new one.
Man, I can't wait.
I'm glad we got this in. I'm glad we got a Bad Boys segment.
Knightdale Bad Boys. And just to go back a little bit, Michael Harrington was one of my teammates. One of my teammates nice. Back in the day. So
MLS
it just kind of
champion.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just kind of speaks to, you know, some of the talent that's been developed. Me and Iko Parr played for the same club, you know, growing up. And obviously you see what he's doing in the league now. 2-time MLS Defender of the Year. So I just think, you know, seeing players like that come into the league and do what they have done and have the success and of achievements they've had, you know, really speaks to the quality of play that's down there and the quality of talent that's in North Carolina.
Let's talk about the city itself. And I know you're a Raleigh guy, but you've obviously been to Charlotte a few times and you're better acquainted than probably most of our listeners are. When Atlanta came in, there were real questions about will the South embrace soccer? And obviously they've done it in spectacular, literally record-breaking fashion. Is Charlotte just kind of a smaller Atlanta, or is it a different type of culture in the town?
I feel like there's similarities and there's, you know, they have their differences as well. Mm-hmm. I think to compare it directly with Atlanta would be a high expectation. I think it's very unique in it has so many different, you know, cultures down there, and it's a growing city. It's a booming city. I think, you know, from a fan demographic standpoint, they're going to be able to capture, you know, a lot of different audiences, being that you can capture, you know, Raleigh. You can go down south, get kind of some of North Georgia as well. You can reach into Tennessee a bit. And also just the commercial opportunity that they're going to have in North Carolina. It's a hotbed. It's a financial hotbed. So I think they're going to be able to kind of use their commercial resources to really tap into and, you know, elevate the community and elevate the sport from a technical and, you know, commercial standpoint. So I think it's going to be a unique city, and they're going to have to find their niche a little bit. You know, Atlanta really leaned into the hip hop urban demographic, as you can see with their fan culture and How they've elevated that into the or incorporated that into their fan experience and their game day experience. I don't think Charlotte's gonna, you know, they have to find something very organic and authentic to them. And I think with the group that Tepper is putting in place, I think he'll figure it out. They're gonna be creative. They're gonna be innovative. You can see, you know, early on, commissioners like, we're not gonna let any teams in without a stadium. But I'm sure Tepper's, you know, had his innovative thinking in terms of how they want to build their stadium and renovate Bank of America Stadium. So I think, you know, the resources that he's putting together and the team he's putting together are going to find a way to really get it done.
One of the things you've talked about on this show, and I think Merritt Paulson's name has come up, is active owners who are engaged, help build that fan base. David Tepper sounds like he's
pretty engaged.
He's ready to go. He's not going to be quiet. He's ready to party. He was out at the bar all night with these fans, buying drinks and giving speeches and celebrating. And he seems like he's going to be what you've been asking for, which is an engaged owner who wants to push the league forward.
I mean, you put 325 on the table
up front.
You better be engaged. And by the way, it does seem like it's resonated. Tom Glick, the president of the Panthers, said on local radio there that they've sold 7,000 season ticket deposits in the first 24 hours. Like, they don't even have a team name yet, and they got 7,000 season ticket deposits. I think those convert to, like, 99% of those people actually buy season tickets. They're probably over 10,000 as we're talking, because it's another 6 hours after that.
So, Darius, your family should get on.
Yeah, right?
They should get on the phone now.
I mean, it's crazy because as soon as the team was announced, and, you know, I kind of retweeted it and reposted it on my Instagram, and I'm getting messages from, you know, some of my, you know, former high school teammates, former, you know, people that I grew up with, that some I haven't talked to in ages, and they're, like, excited about, you know, Charlotte coming into town and throwing the fire emoji, and they literally haven't, you know, played a game or stepped foot on the field. So that just shows the influence that it's going to have, the influence that, you know, Charlotte's had, and, you know, they're excited. So I'm excited with them.
Do you expect the team to – I know we're far from this, but, like –
No, this is perfect, because I'll say this. Brian Abernathy from Charlotte emailed us and said he's been following the league, listening to our show for years. He says, today my city finally gets its own franchise. The excitement is real. The emotions are heavy. I can't wait to hear the ETR gang discussing Charlotte for years to come, but I'm mostly just excited to feel a part of this crazy world of MLS, which is perfect because now we're going to overestimate and challenge them 3 years before we should, which is ETR 101.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they don't have a coach yet, which I think is troubling. Now, Doyle, you go.
But would you expect them to go in that Atlanta or Inter Miami direction and look to Latin America? Or do you think that the culture in the Carolinas is more about looking across the pond and getting guys, you know, their own version of what Wayne Rooney was for DC or what Thierry Henry was for the Red Bulls back in the day?
I think they're going to want to just build a winner. They're going to want to build a winning franchise. I think Tepper even, you know, in the announcement said, we want to win MLS Cup. And he seems like he wants to win right away. Like, he wants to come in. He doesn't want to, you know, baby step it and, you know, kind of evaluate and see everything. He wants to try to come in and win right away. So I think they're going to put a product on the field that competes from day one. I think they'll be smart about their signings. I do think they'll lean into Latin America. Mm-hmm. I think they'll have a strong Latin American fan base. And obviously they'll have a strong community fan base, those who are, you know, native to North Carolina and Charlotte. But I think they're going to be smart about their signings. They'll, you know, make the DP splashes when they need to. I think the academy is going to be huge for, obviously speaking earlier about the hotbed of talent and the natural talent that's already there, and the coaches that are there and the exposure that those kids are going to get. And I think they're going to build the right infrastructure to bring those academy kids through the process and through the program. So I think they're going to check every single box. But obviously it all depends on what Tepper invests into it and, you know, how he sees it fit. But I think it's going to be amazing. I think they're going to hit the ground running.
One of the things that's interesting with all the names you've said of all the soccer royalty from the state is, like, who's going to be a part of building this? Because a lot of times you see someone who's local come back and be a part of GM, president, whatever
it is. Are you campaigning for Darius to be GM of the new
Listen, my
new
only
Carolina
campaign
team?
Is apparently some
Carolina bad
website.
Boys?
some rag website called MLSsoccer.com put out some article about the best players in North Carolina history, and my man wasn't in the starting lineup.
Wow.
Beat out by guys like Eddie Pope and Ike Opara.
Come on. Who are these guys?
Just
who
garbage are these guys? Defenders.
I believe they both went to better schools than Darius did, though.
Ooh. I mean,
Wake Forest.
UVA?
UVA.
Yeah. Duke. I think we could all trash on UVA together and just we'll all share in that experience. Not that I have anything against it.
Yeah, but why do you have anything against UVA?
I'm always in favor of being against things.
Okay.
I think that's a positive way for me to live my life.
Okay.
I like to be involved. Brian Abernathy closed his email out with thanks for all you do, ... except Doyle. So I just want to get that in there because I think you've basically followed every theme he wanted. You've overestimated them early and now you've been thanked for it or not. So I appreciate Brian. I appreciate everyone in North Carolina, and welcome if you're new to the show.
And South Carolina. They're probably going to be branded as Carolina something, right? They're probably not going to be North Carolina something.
I was having this conversation with in a group chat with a couple former players and a couple buddies of mine, and we have no idea.
Yeah.
We have no idea. Like, they could go... No,
they could go Charlotte.
They could go, like, Charlotte
it sounds
City.
Like there's a chance Charlotte is in the name. Charlotte.
That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Charlotte Monarchs.
Not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad, right?
I don't know what it's
also like.
It wasn't one of the 10 names that was registered. Yeah, so.
Like Queen City, but that's like get confused
also
with FC Cincinnati a little bit. Like all these cities have so many different names, and nobody knows where they came from.
Whatever it is, we are excited about it. And anyone who's new, welcome. And the world of Major League Soccer is wild and wacky and fun, and we are glad to have a new, you know, member in it, and coming in 2021 will be the Charlotte MLS team, whatever the name is, alongside Austin. And then, as we said, St. Louis and Sacramento will come in after that. Why? Then we will have 30 teams, so we have conference alignment emails. Do you guys want to do that?
Oh, dive right in.
So we've talked a lot about how you'd align the East and the West. What about five divisions of six teams each?
That's right? What the NBA does, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, each conference has three divisions.
But the divisions don't actually matter much in the NBA.
So the recommendation here is you play each team in your division twice for 10 games, leaving one game each against the remaining 24 teams for 34 game schedule.
Sold. Done.
Do you want any division breakdowns? Do you want to hear what?
Yeah, give us the division.
Our guy Jeff was the one who sent this email in. East was Montreal, Toronto, New England, Red Bulls, NYCFC, and Philly. That's a clean one. Midwest...
I don't like DC not being in.
That's
okay. A tough one.
Well,
right
it
there.
Starts to get unclean. Then you've got Midwest is Columbus, Cincinnati, Chicago, Minnesota, KC, and St. Louis. You've got the Pacific.
It's a good one.
Which is LAFC, Galaxy, San Jose, Sacramento, and then trying to shoehorn here, you get RSL and Colorado to try and keep them together. Then you get creative with a West division, which is Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, Dallas, Houston, and Austin to try and keep them together.
Now it's ugly.
And the South is makes sense where you start with Orlando, Miami, then you've got Charlotte and Atlanta, then you've got Nashville, and then you've got DC.
It's close.
It's tough.
It's close, but it's tough, right? Yeah.
Sounds like we need four more teams in it. sorry, five, whatever the division.
I like East and West.
Yeah?
Right? I like East and West.
No matter what, even if there's a ton of teams, are you okay with a situation where East doesn't even play West until the MLS Cup or playoffs?
That's what USL does, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'll say I'm not okay with that. Like, there has to be East-West play. And figuring out how to balance it is going to be a monster task for whoever has to do that across the street.
One of the things I'm completely comfortable with, real quick, and I'm going to throw this out, is the idea of, like, college sports, when you create your own schedules, where it's like there's an opponent you will always play. Like if Nashville and Atlanta, if, you know, Red Bulls, for some reason, Red Bulls and DC aren't in the same division, conference, whatever, and you have an unaligned schedule where you don't evenly play everyone over the course of 5 years so that you play every year, I'm okay with that. I think that's one of the necessities of this whole thing. It's like you have set rivalries that have to exist, and if you have some floating schedule where there's supposed to be, like this year, three teams that you don't play, it should never be those teams.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people will be upset about that, but I'm okay with it. Speaking of that, we have our schedule for 2020. So everyone's got their calendars out. This is Darius taking out his calendar. Doyle's probably going to use an app. He's going to be tech savvy. Here's our calendar right here. We have huge news. National TV schedule, 36 games over the air, including 8 in Canada. It's CTV, 10 on ABC, We've got 4 on Big Fox, 14 on Univision, 20 on ESPN, 1 on ESPN2, and then 30 on Fox Sports 1, and 18 on Unimas. 10 games on ABC. You've got 34 games for every team, 17 home, 17 away. You play everyone in your own conference twice, 10 out-of-conference opponents, and then there are 3 opponents that each team won't play. There's an article on MLSsoccer.com that has each team and the 3 they won't play. So you can go there if you want to figure that out, and you can go there to read Andrew Wiebe's article about all the games he's excited about for all the reasons that he gets excited for things, which are always odd and
narrative-driven.
Very narrative-driven. So you take a look at this schedule. It comes out. We've got, you know, a couple big ones. I think we mentioned when the season openers came out. You've got Nashville opening up against Atlanta. That's going to be pretty cool as someone who's from the area.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a big opportunity. That's going to be a big opportunity to kind of stamp that Southern rivalry. And obviously with more, you know, Southern teams coming into it, kind of, you know, might be an opportunity to create some kind of Southern Cup, if you will.
Ooh. Do you have a name?
The Grits Cup.
The Grits.
Ooh.
Like, I was thinking more of like a barbecue cup, but grits is good. You
know? Darius came to play here.
He did.
I respect that.
I mean, I love a nice bowl of grits.
So. I've never had grits that I've enjoyed, but I'm from the North.
What?
Yeah. I've never experienced. Do you do cheese? Is that the key?
All right.
Okay.
A little butter.
Yeah.
Salt, pepper, sprinkle of cheese.
Okay.
Some people do the sweet grits, like they sprinkle sugar and they like the sweet and savory. I'm all savory.
Okay.
Straight savory.
Okay. And you do shrimp and grits, right?
Love shrimp and grits.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Grits Cup. Do they do grits in Nashville, though?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Atlanta.
How are you asking these questions? This man's the expert.
That's why I'm asking, because he's the expert.
Atlanta does grits. I was in North Carolina this past weekend for the Adidas MLS College Showcase. And we took a Leco out to, you know, just a little diner. He had grits for the first time, so I was able to introduce him to grits. So I love introducing people to grits who've never had them.
Okay, well, then that's something we're going to have to do together.
Yeah, right?
Let's do it.
Outside of that big home opener, we've got LAFC, LA Galaxy 2 times on national TV, 1 on ABC, 1 on Fox. And if anyone remembers what happened last year, that one's probably going to break every record for MLS viewership. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. No, I mean, for sure. Like, El Trafico has always delivered, and yet it's like 5th on my list of things that, I mean, I can't wait to see Inter Miami play. I know they don't have a coach. I know they only have half a roster at this point.
Half a stadium.
But they, like, it's, I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with it, because I think they're going to be LAFC or Atlanta level right out the gate. Obviously, the time frame is getting pretty narrow on that actually coming to pass, but they still have 2 open DP slots, and they still have almost all of their allocation money, and they still have a ton of flexibility. So I'm looking forward to, you know, the first couple of games that that Inter Miami play, but in particular, Inter Miami versus Orlando. Poor Orlando City, they didn't even get to be a rival with Atlanta because they just haven't won a game against them. Like, it feels like this year is going to be kind of a reset for them, and they're going to get to reset their team as a legitimate regional rival comes in for them. So it's exciting. Like, for the entire state of Florida, that should be exciting.
See, I somewhat disagree with you on Inter Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see them play. I'm thrilled. I get all the buzz. But the longer time goes on, the less and less optimistic that they're going to be a LAFC or Atlanta United. Just, I think they have so much to do in such a short period of time. I think they're acquiring players, not knowing, you know, the coaching style, the tactics that are going to be used. So I'm not saying it can't be done, but I was on board with you from the start, from the jump. And then as time goes on, I think they're going to need a little bit more time to kind of, you know, integrate themselves into MLS.
Yeah, December 19th. They still don't have a coach. So yeah.
Well, our weekly drop of The Athletic, Paul Tenorio, had an article about Nashville and Inter Miami building. And Paul McDonough, who is going to be running or is running Inter Miami, specifically pointed out you guys and said, all the media heads who think they know everything, they think we're behind, they have no idea what's going on. So he disagrees with you guys. And apparently January 1st is the new date we're going to learn the new manager, so that will be the next one that will blow right through until we get the actual guy. But
I hope they prove me wrong.
I hope they do too. March 14th will be their home debut. That one, of course, will be against LA Galaxy, one we're very excited about. And of course, the big ones to put on your calendar, Heineken Rivalry Week, August 20th to 23rd. A lot of big games, some new rivalries coming in. I think Nashville plays FC Dallas that week, so Nashville's got to start to grow their rivalries across the league. And then Decision Day, presented by AT&T, will be on October 4th. And it was a pretty good one this year, guys. So we have a lot to live up to, but I think the last 2 weeks this year showed what it could be. And now you add two more teams, you got more going on. It's going to be pretty fun.
Definitely, definitely. I think, I really love Decision Day this year. I think, know that so much is at stake. Obviously having those games on national TV too. That
if you played, would you enjoy it or would you hate not knowing what was going on in the other games?
I mean, I think that raises the stakes a little bit, right? That keeps the game honest. That makes you, know that there's something to actually play for. That adds pressure to you. That adds, a little bit of bite to, to that game and meaning to that game. So I had no problems with having that pressure on me. When it comes down to it, that's what they pay you the big bucks for.
That's how we felt on Decision Day. Just trying to consume it all. Yeah. It felt like a lot of pressure.
It actually did, but
Oh wow, yeah. Doyle, I'm here for you.
I broke.
Yeah, it's okay. You're almost on vacation. Yeah. You're almost at that. So that's your whole schedule. You can go to MLSsoccer.com. Also, I highly recommend going basically to every team in MLS's Twitter feed at this point and watch their videos of how they release their schedules, because they are hilarious and creative across the board. As usual, Galaxy killed it, DC United, Red Bulls. I don't want to leave anyone out, but I left a bunch of people out. Chicago Fire.
You just named three of 2016. Four. Well, no, four of 2016.
I got worried because then I was like, uh-oh, now I got to name all 26 if I keep going. Those are some of the ones I noticed on the way into the studio, so those are some of the ones I'm pointing out. But all of them have been good. Speaking of the Chicago Fire, though, good thing I got that one in.
Nice segue.
Rumors are that they are close to hiring a sporting director, a Swiss native who was the sporting director for FC Basel from 2009.
You could call him reports. At this point, they're not rumors.
Ah, and the differences?
A credible journalist sources it, then it's a report. If it's some, Twitter egg, then it's a rumor.
So, like, if someone like you says it, it's a rumor. But if a real journalist...
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Exactly.
Did Paul or Sam say it?
I think Sam.
Okay, then we're good. Journalists are reporting. George Heights.
There you go.
George
Actually, it's Sam. It's a rumor.
Bird Dog, out there, Bird Dog. And George Heights would be the sporting director for the Chicago Fire. He would report directly to Joe Mansueto, the new owner, and then he would proceed to build out the front office.
No, wait, this is from Paul, so this is a report.
Okay.
Yeah.
Reported.
Okay, whatever. We'll go back and forth on this one.
Rumor report.
So here, this is what we're hearing. Let's start with, if this was to be the way this goes down, let's say Paul or Sam is right for the first time in their lives, and this happens. Is this a good move? Is this what you're hoping for? Is it just like, it's time, let's start moving anyway? It doesn't really matter.
I mean, at the very least, it's that last one. Like, they need, this was, 2 months ago, Nelson Rodriguez gave his postseason Q&A, and he said, I'm stepping away from the sporting side of things. We have to break this up. We're one half does business and one half does sporting, and it's taken 2.5 months to get the sporting side not even officially confirmed, but it at the very least, this is a step. FC Basel, I can't claim to have watched a ton of them or any of the Swiss League. I've only ever seen them play in Europa League and occasionally Champions League.
Which, by the way, under Heights, they were extremely successful.
Right, they got round of 16 a couple times. Yeah.
Shaqiri came through, Mohamed Salah. A lot of the... Basically, they won 8 titles in his nine years.
Yeah, so
they were pretty good.
He seemed to have a lot of success, and that's obviously a good point on the CV. And the other thing is, MLS teams are doing this because MLS teams are... And by doing this, I mean hiring sporting directors or GMs from overseas, because MLS teams are becoming more and more interested, not just in importing talent, but in having those networks to sell talent overseas. And FC Basel has sold a lot of talent over the past 10 or 15 years. So if Chicago signs Mauricio Pineda from UNC and he's amazing and they can sell him for $3 million to Basel or to AZ Alkmaar or something like this guy has those contacts. So it makes sense in that regard. The area where it's, I don't want to say concerning, but like you also understand why so many teams have looked in the direction of Latin America recently, because so many, like the future of this league is not just the United States of America and Canada, but it's Latin America. Like, we have to be the best league in the Americas. That means having those contacts there as well. So you wonder what the rest of the staff is going to end up looking like, the front office staff, I mean, is going to end up looking like for the Chicago Fire. But, I mean, on the face of it, this is like, it looks like a very good hire.
So let's say that this is what happens. You've got three DP spots open, which is pretty rare. You're moving into a new stadium. You've rebranded. Do you go aggressive in 2020? And we've got Jameson M, who apparently we convinced to be a Chicago Fire fan, so you're welcome, and he wants to know what you think. Do you go aggressive or sort of, and we're about to talk about Columbus, do you take your time to build yourself out and maybe push in 2021 or in the summer?
Yeah, I mean, I think the good thing is he has a blank canvas to work with, you know, but you have to get it right. You have to get it right, move it into Soldier Field. You're trying to reinvigorate that fan base. You know, you've rebranded. So you've taken a lot of those, you know, first initial steps to kind of revamp the organization. So I think it's a multifaceted approach. I think it's a dual approach and a hybrid of the two in terms of, you know, you go out and do your homework and you bring someone who's going to be, you know, he's going to be a value and an asset and a contributor right away. But I don't think they need to go out and make a huge splash and, you know, get three big name players right away. They've tried to, you know, tried to do that and kind of backstep and backtrack a little bit when they signed, you know, Schweinsteiger. Obviously, he had a great career and did great things for Chicago. But I think that was more of a kind of a panic move, if you will. I think they definitely need to be more strategic. And if they could, obviously, you know, lean into, you know, the resources, I think you hit it big when you talk about the network of bringing in some of these foreign sporting directors in terms of, you know, having those assets and having those contacts abroad to, you know, buy and sell players. I think as MLS becomes more of a selling league, having those contacts is going to be absolutely monumental. But also to find and seek talents and to have those contacts with scouts to evaluate talent, I think that's going to be huge for Chicago. So I really think, you know, them separating the kind of the sporting and commercial side a bit helps them out so they can don't spread themselves too thin and really have the proper focus to go out there and identify talent and put out the best product on the pitch.
Let me help them. Chicharito. Look, I've just identified talent for the Chicago Fire. Like he's still playing in La Liga. He signed a 3-year deal with Sevilla, but he's not playing much. And we all know it would take a monumental effort to get it done, but he's still worth it. He's 31.
So would you do it now or for the summer and have a season?
I would do it right now. I would get Chicharito. I would then go for I would go for a young sort of what Miguel Almirón was, level DP out of South America. And the third one, I probably just look for, like, you got to find, like, you got rid of Dax McCarty.
Yeah,
you got to find a D-mid.
Yeah.
You go three DPs off the bat?
I do.
Yeah?
Yep. I absolutely would if because, and you said it, you only get one chance at this. They're moving back downtown. They have to reinvigorate this fan base. And Chicago's, Chicago's a big city, and you can get lost really easy in a big city if you don't have big names. This isn't like, you know, like Portland or, you know, Kansas City, where like being the local club can mean it, because in Chicago, it's 10 million people and everybody has something different to do. So I honestly think they have to go out and they have to get, you know, a player whose name is bright neon lights, 12 feet tall, and like everybody knows, like, oh, this team is serious.
But the thing you want to be careful of is the Schweinsteiger example of you do it, but the team around it's not ready. Now you get people to come. What does it look like? Rather than do you build a little bit, and then in the summer you bring guys into a more established roster where you're ready to be good when people come in the building
at
a big time. Whether you make the playoffs then or not is another question, but you have that run to push people.
I get what you're saying, but at this point, I think the margins are that thin for Chicago, because the last thing you want to do is get to Soldier Field,
yeah,
lose your first five games, score four goals, and everybody in Chicago is already like, click.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah,
it's an interesting situation, because
yeah,
there's a lot to like if you're coming in as a sporting director because of the blank canvas, as you said, that you have. There's a lot to do. There's also a great soccer history there. The club has a great history, which you can kind of rely on and lean back on in terms of hiring people who have contacts in Central, yep, and South America, who have worked in the U.S. soccer circles.
It's a world city.
And on top of all that, you've got all of these backgrounds that you can draw from. And as you said, Chicharito will get people in the building anywhere in the U.S., but mm-hmm, you've got options like a Lewandowski, as we've talked about, where you have those backgrounds. Well, he's had a poor season.
Yeah, he's been lousy.
He's got 30 goals so far midway through the year, I think. So it's a possibility. On the flip side, if you choose to take it a little slower, we've got the Columbus Crew, who got a new ownership group right at the end of 2018. Tim Bezbachenko took over both business and sporting side right after that. And rather than be uber aggressive and kind of jump in front of things, they took their time. They got the lay of the land. They struggled, admittedly, in 2019. And now it looks like they're ready to make their largest signing in club history. 27-year-old Lucas Zelarayán out of Tigres. He's originally from Argentina, but he's been in Mexico for the last 3 years. The reported rumors numbers is between $7 and $8 million transfer fee. Their highest in their club's history was Pedro Santos for $2 million. So it would be quadruple what they've done. They've also signed a center back in Vito Wormgård out of Norway originally, but from Holland. But let's start with Zelarayán, because this is one of those signings, Dolan, we've talked about it a little bit this offseason. It's a guy that we've all watched and enjoyed, not thinking what would he look like in MLS, and now all of a sudden that name falls down and you're like, this is a legit Tigres player.
Yeah. I mean, he's been a starter for the most part on what I think has been the team of the decade in North America. This Tigres, I know they still haven't won an international tournament, but they've won, you know, more Ligas than anybody else, and I think they have the best record in Mexico over the past 10 years, which is pretty good. And he's been a big part of that since 2015 or 16. Mm-hmm. And he was at Belgrano before that, so, you know, starring in the Argentine Primera. He's in his prime. He's not a pure magician, right? Like, you're not going to watch him and be like, oh my God, it's like watching Riquelme all over again. He's not like, you know, Mauro Diaz was for FC Dallas. He's more of a modern player. He covers more ground. He can hurt you in more and different ways. And I'm curious to see now, because like, he's such a hard-working number, he's almost like a number eight. I'm curious to see now what this means for how the Crew play. Because mm-hmm, Caleb Porter, in his now 6 years in MLS, for the most part, for five of those years, he's had a counterattacking team. Played possession in 2013, but for the rest of it, it's almost all, I don't want to say almost always, but it's more often than not been counterattacking. But now, with, you know, the two wingers they have, Diaz and Santos, with Zelarayán, with Nagby and Artur, and then Will Trapp, you know, probably, like, is he a backup at this point, or is Artur? Like, this team can and maybe even should press. This should be a really front foot team, because they just look like they are going to be miserable to try to play through.
So we got an email from Dan in Columbus. I just want to fill in, because you basically did 7 of the 11 starting spots there. He mentioned this starting 11 and he wants to know what you think about it, but it would be Eloy Room in goal, most likely. Milton Valenzuela, who was originally a designated player signing at left back. He's still only like 20, 21?
21, 22. Yeah.
And missed all of 2019. So alone, they were going to upgrade this year because he was going to return.
Yep.
Harrison Offal missed large stretches of 2019 as well at right back. You've got Wormgore, who just came in as left center back, and Jonathan Mensah.
I just want to say, it's probably Wormgore.
You think so?
Yeah, because he's Dutch.
I know. But it's exciting to hear you say that, because that's a great name.
Okay.
It's better than what I said.
Wormgore.
Yeah. Both of them are strong.
Okay.
Such an American worm.
Yeah. I just wanted him to welcome. I just want to welcome him to Ohio the only way you can be welcome, which is mispronouncing your name. And then Jonathan Mensah at the other center back. Most likely, I think most people are assuming Will Trapp will start, because he's an Akron guy. He's a Columbus.
Played for Caleb.
Yeah. And he's the captain of the team.
Yeah.
It seems like Nagby will start alongside him. And then the attacking front four that you mentioned, with, of course, Jesse Zardes up top. This is You don't want to talk about what it means in the East yet because you don't know enough about the Eastern Conference. Let's just start with this. This is exciting. Like, this would be fun to watch. If I'm a Columbus fan, this is a really good day.
Yeah, I mean, I think that front six is invigorating and exciting within itself. I think Mac, you hit it spot on. You need a high press. And it needs to be a kind of hybrid between counterattacking and, you know, that balanced possession style of play that, you know, I think Caleb wants to play. I think he preferred to play that way, but just being able to adapt in today's game and knowing what's effective and being able to make those adjustments on the fly. But this, the front six, and for Zardes to have somebody to link up with a little bit, he's not much of a link up player, more kind of getting behind, but I think he has shown that ability. Later last year that he's able to, you know, hold the ball up a little bit and, you know, connect with the attacking mid and that false nine. So I think having Lucas in there and then also having Nagby, you know what you're going to get. Such a clean and consistent player, never loses the ball, can spray the ball all across the pitch. I think he's really going to be the true catalyst for this squad.
If Porter's been there for a year and they sign this guy, he's got to be on board.
Yeah.
Like, they have to play. Yeah. He has to be happy with what he, yeah, that style then.
No, I absolutely assume so. And, like, look, Caleb Porter and Tim Bezpachenko have worked together in the past. They know, I think they clearly have a vision and they're clearly working together for it. It's an exciting, I mean, again, he was a starter, yeah, for the best team in the region for years.
He's also only 27.
Yeah.
Quintero was a great signing, but Quintero was short term. This, yeah, is a guy who can be around for four or five years.
This is maybe, prime. Like, this is, it's very similar to what they had with Federico Higuain. That's, and I, right, assume they're very much hoping that he is this era's Pipa, or, you know, this era's Diego Valeri.
And I think you mentioned the style of player is, lazy comp would be Maxi Morales, but it's pretty similar of a guy who changes the game by just covering so much ground, being clean, being
smart,
around,
man,
everywhere,
yeah,
and also can finish.
Yeah.
Like, he can score when he finishes, it's going to look pretty and it's going to be big. And then you've got the options outside of him that are going to stretch the field and get it wide. And you've got these fullbacks that are going to be now all of a sudden.
I'm really looking, again, yeah, really looking forward to seeing Valenzuela. He would have been top five on 22 under 22 this past year if he had played a single minute. So,
so it seems like their starting lineup set. We talked about Arthur maybe being available around the league. You'd think people would come and ask. You've got three legit center mids for two spots. So MLS, you need depth. No, yeah, one has depth. Having depth is great. It seems like they have some okay depth at center back as well, bringing in Huberg, having Abubakar Keita in the ranks already, but they don't have a backup forward. Kind of thin on the wings as well. They do have Hector Mena. So
are we giving up on J.J. Williams as a backup center forward yet? I mean, he had his first year, right? You're getting your feet wet. And, like, a lot of guys improve in year two.
Scored a bunch of goals for Birmingham.
Yeah, there you go.
So
also, just to go back to Will Trapp as well and that talk about that flux of center midfielders that they have, I think in years, Will Trapp hasn't really been pushed in Columbus in terms of competition. So I think this might help kind of push him to the next level. And having that competition and so many capable and, you know, qualified central midfielders in there, I think is only going to elevate his game as well.
And it'll be interesting to see what Nagby does back under Porter, back home. It's always, everyone's always wondered what the buttons were to push with him to get the best out of him. You'd say probably his best time was with Porter. Obviously, he was with him for so long in Portland, and he's always wanted to come home. He's always wanted to be there. Now he's there. This is his team. Basically, we'll see what happens. I think it's an exciting time right now for Columbus fans. Let us know what you think. Of course, at Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com for the email. We're going to be away, so that probably means Weeby will be on the email like the entire time, and we'll respond to every single tweet to the Extra Time Radio account because he's home with his family, and I don't know. That's what he does. So
it's a good way to unwind.
Yeah, for sure. To get deeper into the weeds of the internet and all the things that happen
get
there.
Get abused on Twitter. It's perfect.
It makes him happy. So we allow it. Otherwise, we'd lock him out of the account. But we can't do that because we love him so, so much. And we miss you, Andrew, which he'll never hear about.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Are you guys ready to get even more silly? Because now we're going to legit get into rumors.
There we go.
Not reports.
Go ahead.
You ready?
Yeah.
Rumors are in Brazil that Grêmio, which was a club that had already approached this, or rumors had come out about this summer, has made an approach about signing permanently PT Martinez from Atlanta United. It wasn't great in 2019. He was supposed to be the next Almirón. It was tough. There was probably upswing towards the end of the year, which makes you think
for sure
it'll look better next year. Any thoughts here?
I tend to believe this one. I don't know these. I don't know these Brazilian reporters at all. But Grêmio is a big club with a lot of resources. They badly want to win the Copa Libertadores again. And PT makes sense for them in a lot of ways. So I would not be shocked at all if this was legit. And like,
but that side makes sense. The question is the other side. Atlanta United made a huge move in signing the South American Player of the Year.
Yeah, did he look like the South American Player of the Year? Did he look like a $50 million player at any point?
No, but many...
You already have one guy on the roster like that. No, I mean, like, Barco has a ton of talent and a ton of potential. He hasn't looked like a $15 million player. Like, if you want to win in 2020, like, maybe, okay, it didn't work with PT. Give him a move that makes him happy and at least give Frank de Boer the chance to sign one of his, a guy that he has his eye on as a DP.
But to be fair, in the, you know, the beginning part of 2019, Barco looked like the player that, you know, that we brought him in, that MLS brought him in to be, that Atlanta United brought him in to be. I thought he was full of confidence before, was it the U-20 World Cup, I think. Mm-hmm. He came back, he got hurt, and his form dipped a little bit. I'm on the fence in terms of, I'm on the side in terms of give PT another year to really prove himself and to be a little bit more comfortable in DeBoer's system. I think, you know, like, I feel like he probably heard everything from a lot of the of his teammates of how, you know, Tata played and the culture when Tata was there. So I think it was a lot of different, you know, external circumstances that might have, you know, formulated into him not having the season that, you know, everyone expected him to have. And obviously there's huge boulders on your shoulders when you, you know, a club pays that much money for you. So I think, you know, given the time and the opportunity this year, I think this would be the year, or at least half of this year, to judge Petey Martinez on his performance on the field.
Great thoughts there from Darius Barnes, legend who has now disappeared. He had to let go and do real work, I think.
Yeah.
A real job.
Yeah, Darius is actually a suit. You might not have realized that because he was dressed so casually.
He actually went into the bathroom and did a full Superman reverse.
Wears a tie, yeah. Loafers.
Yeah. Looks good in them.
He does. From former professional athlete, for God's sake.
You know, every once in a while, we do this about the managers, where who's well dressed. And I think it's come up about Pep because he wore like the same sweater for like six straight months when last season with Man City. And it's like, you know why they're well dressed? Because they're in perfect physical condition.
Yeah, exactly.
They could wear a garbage bag and it would look good.
Right.
But besides that, it was really nice to have Darius get some North Carolina, you know, knowledge in there besides
some grits. I can't believe you've said you've never had grits.
That I liked.
Huh.
I've never enjoyed them. I, in fairness, have not spent heavy amounts of time in the South, although now I've been to Atlanta a lot. I don't really order it.
Yeah.
I was in Savannah, Georgia for actually the holidays 2 years ago, and me and my sister tried it a couple times. And one of the times it's like, it just, so is the point to just cover it in whatever you like?
Yeah. I mean,
it's a vehicle.
It's like a better version of oatmeal. Like, you could have savory oatmeal, you could have fruity, you could have sweet. Grits is that, I mean, I usually, like Darius, I usually go for
savory.
For savory.
Yeah,
shrimp and grits is amazing. Do you do shellfish?
I don't eat shellfish. But I covered mine in hot sauce, which I liked. Because I like hot sauce.
Yeah, covering it seems a little extreme.
Well, but I just like to eat things that taste... Like, that's what I do when I do make rice and beans. I just cover it in hot sauce.
All right.
It's all a vehicle. Well, on that note, thanks so much to Darius for coming on. We'll have him back, of course, in 2020. We are very excited about that. But let's finish off some of these... I don't know if harebrained is what you'd call them.
Well, no, it's silly season stuff. There are rumors. Some of them, I think, will pan out.
Yeah.
Some probably won't.
So this one's actually real.
Mm-hmm.
FC Cincinnati...
This is a report.
No.
This is done.
Yeah.
Okay.
FC Cincinnati signed a center back, Tom Pedersen, 29-year-old, out of Osterruns?
Any relation to Joel?
No, but I'm pretty sure they're the exact same person.
Right.
Tall, thin, center back, white dude. He is 29. My birds in Scandinavia have said this. Good, very smart player. Confident on the ball, strong ball winner and reader of the game. It'll be interesting to see how he adapts to what they do. And I think we saw this in the comments from FC Cincinnati front office. They said he's going to be a guy who helps us build out of the back.
Pedersen, Van der Werf, Kendall Waston now. And they still have Nick Haglund as well. So, like, they have their center back rotation. They obviously still have a lot of work to do, but I don't think they're going to give up 75 goals again.
And it seems like it will be five at the back, right?
Does it?
Oh, you don't think so?
I'm not sure.
Interesting. it can't be worse than what it was last year. And I think there's an idea of like getting veterans, getting settled guys who, as you said,
I mean, it could be, won't give up 70. It could be like a 5-4-1, but I think a 4-3-3 with Madunyanin as the back point, and then get two really hardworking, you know, kind of number eights in Alan front Cruz. Of them. Yeah, Cruz and Bertoni, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be pretty, but you know that Madunyanin is amazing at getting wingers into space to do damage. So I honestly think it's going to be defend with seven and attack with three on the break into space, and I think that that's a step forward for Cincinnati in 2020.
We have another official signing, I believe, in Francisco Guinella, officially signed by LAFC out of Uruguay. We sort of mentioned it last week, 20-year-old center mid.
Mm-hmm.
From similar pipeline to what they've been using with Rodriguez and Rossi. And you mentioned this with Palacios. As a good team, they continue to amp up, but also it seems like prepare for what is probably the departure of one or two of their center mids.
Yeah, it seems likely that Edouard Atua, like I know for a fact that he's attracted overseas interest. Will they hang on to him this winter? I think so. But will they sell him this, you know, next summer?
Right.
I think so. And when that happens, you have the plug-and-play replacement, just like Rodriguez is the plug-and-play replacement for Rossi, who I think will be sold this winter.
Really? Still?
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. I'm shocked that Marc-Anthony Kay is not getting more talk, by the way, because he is so good, and because he changed positions,
mm-hmm.
I understand he's quote-unquote older for development, but he's just learned what he's done, and he already does it at such a high level, and I think he still has steps to go, but... whatever.
I mean, it wouldn't shock me, but also bear in mind, like, there's a market for Colombians and Uruguayans and Argentinians. Mm-hmm. There just isn't a market. Like, if you sign a Canadian or American player, you have to explain yourself to your fans in Europe. You don't have to do that.
Oh, I can explain you. There's a nice little clip from Alfonso Davies yesterday of him basically tearing through three quarters of a Bundesliga team,
man,
and setting up Lewandowski. So we'll see what happens there. LAFC, it feels like they're pretty steady for what they'll be next year, but continuing to add pieces. An interesting report coming out of Mexico that William Yarbrough, who is, of course, a U.S. national team goalkeeper, born in Mexico and had been playing for León for the last few years, won a title with them. He could be on his way to the Houston Dynamo, as he seems to have been replaced at León and is available. We haven't heard a ton since Darwin Quintero and obviously Tab Ramos taking over. Yarbrough seems like would be competitive to be a starter in Major League Soccer. And for Houston, how much more building are you looking at there?
I don't know if it's a lot, because if you look, like, they're obviously going to add a few pieces, but Matias Vera is coming back. They still have Tomas Martinez. They haven't made any news about moving him on. I do expect Mauro Minotas to be sold, right?
But we haven't heard anything.
No, we haven't. That might change in 12 days when the window opens, though. But like, even if they sell him, they still have Christian Ramirez, who scored 15 goals in MLS a couple of years ago. So like, they have a deeper team than I think people realize. The question is, can Tab Ramos get sort of instant chemistry for this team?
Mm-hmm.
Because they had that at the start of last year, and then they immediately lost it. And the other thing is, like, how good can Albert Elise be? We thought he would be better by now, right? And in big games, it seems like for a lot of teams, your ceiling is determined by how good your best player is. And Albert Elise was really good at times, but he wasn't that good often enough.
Yeah, it seems like what Tab wants to do should unleash him in that high pressing, having a way that they play that fits what Elise is good at. He's not good when teams sit back on him, and he has to create spaces out of against a set defense. We'll see. I think it's going to be an interesting year in Houston. In Orlando, Oscar Perea has a lot of work to do, not that much time. We've heard some rumors about a center forward coming from his former club in Colombia, an Argentine center forward, and not sure if that will come true. A new rumor here is Antonio Carlos, a 26-year-old Brazilian center back currently at Palmeiras, who would be on a one-year loan, which, in my mind, center back is the first thing he needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to fix, so this makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Even if it's a one-year fix, you just need to start at that spot.
Absolutely. And, you know, Palmeiras has been one of the two or three best teams in Brazil for the past couple of years. So, like, if they're willing to loan him out, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's because he hasn't made it. It means, like, this is a guy with experience at a top team in a very good league. So it would make a lot of sense. The other thing, RSL getting Zach McMath for $50,000 in GAM, that feels like the right move from them. And
just to have options to replace Raimondo?
I think so.
Yeah.
Because I like David Ochoa a lot, but he's 18. Not sure if he's going to be ready to step right into the starting lineup.
Yeah.
Putna had good moments last year, but you're not sure he's a starter. Zach McMath, I think a lot of people have felt for the past couple of years that he was a starting caliber keeper. He'll get a chance to prove it this year, it seems.
They also re-extended Aaron Herrera, which is a big move for them because that puts them in control of a player who I think is going to be borderline national team over the next few years.
I mean, he should be their Tony Beltran for this decade.
I think he might be a guy who leaves, but they get something from him.
All right.
Everything I've heard from people who work with him think that he is the best that's come out of the RSL Academy in a while.
All right. I mean, he had a really good year. I don't know if I see that ceiling for him, but I'm willing to reframe my view based upon how 2020 goes.
It should be an interesting year. A lot of different stuff going on. Last little bit of news. It sounds like Lucho Acosta's time in Major League Soccer is done. He is heading to Atlas in Mexico. Although the report came out from Steve Goff, who's pretty accurate on these things, that he had negotiated with two Western Conference MLS teams, which would have been a fascinating way for this whole thing to end.
Yeah.
Is for him to stay in the league and DC to kind of actually get something for him because they control his rights in MLS. And for him to still play in MLS would have been odd.
It would have. It arguably would have made more sense. It's our good buddy Pablo Mar from The Athletic, another Athletic plug.
Pablo deserves it after the week he's had.
Yeah, he's had a very good week.
He's had a thirst-quenching week.
Pablo saying that it's 99% done that Lucho goes to Atlas. Atlas is a graveyard, man.
Like, is Rafa Marquez still playing?
He's not.
Okay.
But Atlas haven't even come close to a title in 20 years.
Yeah.
And they haven't won a trophy of any sort in, I think, half a century or something like that.
And I think the stadium's falling apart.
Yeah.
Since Chivas left.
Yeah. It's not a...
Lucho, we loved you while we had you. You're welcome back anytime, whatever happens. Let's finish off with a few mailbag pieces. Chad from Texas, who mentioned a few weeks ago, our CCL fever seemed to be in full effect. Here's his Tylenol to bring down our fever. LAFC has been terrible in knockout games so far. What makes you think they'll perform better in CCL?
It's home and home.
So rather than one game knockout, they have a little more breathing space?
Yeah.
Although they've lost that home in knockout games.
They have. No.
Do they fit the Liga MX style?
No. Because if you look at Liga MX teams, the ones that have dominated, well, Monterrey certainly, when they dominate MLS teams, it's like we're defending with six and we're attacking with four. We're not overlapping. We're just going to turn you over and then we go. And that is actually kind of kryptonite to LAFC. So just in terms of stylistic, it could be a struggle. But in terms of talent, this team is, I still think they're legit and I still think they have a chance.
And cohesion, no changes really outside of the fullback spots necessary, which means for the rare time, like we saw with TFC, the team from last year goes straight into next year. You don't need to reset yourself. We'll see what happens.
And if they sell Rossi, they will have that open DP slot. And I've said this before, I think that they should go out and get a high-level center forward.
It would be fun to watch.
It would.
It's going to be fun to watch anyway. I'm pretty excited with the schedule out. So much to look forward to in 2020. We, of course, will be back early on in 2020 with all of our shows. We love all the participation we get in the mail. Weeby's been trolling through the YouTube comments.
Does your family blow it out for Hanukkah?
No, that's not a thing.
Yeah, I didn't think so either.
I'm offended by that. I had to watch a Lifetime movie about Hanukkah and Christmas, and I was offended the whole time that they were comparing the two. But on Sunday, I get to eat latkes, which are fried potatoes, which is really good.
Do you do sweet potato latkes?
Not when we do, like, if I'm at a restaurant and being fancy, but not at home. We do zucchini sometimes, but it's potato. Come on, man.
All right.
It's fried. It sticks to your sides on the inside.
Keeps it warm throughout the rest of the winter.
It is going to be good. What are you looking forward to?
Just a week off, man. just a week to relax. There.
And cap this time. By a Liga MX final.
Yeah.
A final on the 26th or 29th. It's a nice little...
And we saw what that Monterrey team can do against Liverpool. Yeah. Like, they went toe-to-toe.
They should have won that game.
They should have won that game.
Yeah. And on that note, almost there, but not really in international soccer. That is the story of ETR. That is the story of our lives. 2019 was a fantastic year. We thank you all for watching, for joining us, for myself.
Oh, we didn't cover the Bobby stuff. Next time.
Okay. For myself, for Anders Aarhus, our fantastic Swedish producer, director, promoter, every little thing, Matt Doyle, Andrew Wiebe, Bobby, Kaylin, Susanna.
Cast now, of thousands.
Darius, we've got so much
great
stuff.
You mentioned Carlos, our guy Charlie back there.
Yeah. He keeps it all together, even when it's all falling apart, like right now. Thanks to everyone. Happy New Year. Have a great set of holidays, and we'll see you in 2020. We'll be right back.